Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman, as the announcer just told you, and Walker Wildman is with me. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be on the show.
And Fred Jackson from AFR News.
Always great to be here.
At the bottom of the hour, J.J. Jasper will be with us. J.J. will talk about hurricane hunting. He went on a few years ago. He went on a plane. I think they left out of Gulfport, Biloxi area, and flew into the eye of a hurricane. So he's been there, done that, and he's going to tell us about that experience because that's what these guys are doing now during the hurricane season. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted sort of to understand how that worked. So we'll be talking to J.J. coming up at the bottom of the hour. Walker, folks want to join us on Facebook or YouTube. What can they get there?
Yeah, they can go to Facebook or YouTube, as you mentioned, and type in Today's Issues, which is the show name, and you can watch the show there. Also, catch the news stories. We'll send links over to the Facebook page. You can click on the news stories there and read through. Also, you can always visit our website, afr.net, or download the app on your phone and listen to American Family Radio.
Well, speaking of Hurricane Dorian, Fred, what's the latest?
Well, the latest is Dorian is about 95 miles east of Daytona Beach. Just watching some of the live hits from there this morning, it's kind of a big wave event. Florida has escaped this one for the most part.
So it's not going to make landfall.
Not in Florida. But South Carolina, North Carolina, look out.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's downgraded to a Category 2, right?
It's a 2, but, center of the storm, 105 miles per hour. So you're still talking a pretty
major
good blow.
Power outages.
Power outages. There are thousands already without power as you move forward from Daytona Beach to Jacksonville, Florida, and then on up. But we're talking tomorrow, South Carolina, a little bit later in the week, North Carolina. It's possible. If it keeps on the track that it's on right now, it will actually make landfall in those two states, just the way the curvature.
South Carolina, North Carolina?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Myrtle Beach area, that kind of?
In that area, yeah. So we watch Charleston, those kind of, Charleston's a very low-lying city, not a lot of altitude to escape to there. So Charleston.
What's President Trump going to do about this?
Well, it's all his fault, right?
Well, I blame him or Bush won, huh? For this hurricane.
Oh, I know.
Huh?
I know.
And you can credit Obama for it going back out to sea. So I think that's the way this works. You know what? I was reading last night, Walker, Fred, and somebody was saying a reading on an internet site about this, about the storm, and they said, I went to CNN for a report on Hurricane Dorian, and I got about 1 minute of Hurricane Dorian, and then I got about 10 minutes of how it was Trump's fault because of the Paris global warming.
That's insanity. You know,
it's Trump derangement syndrome taking over even to the weather world.
Yeah, the left has been trying to tie so-called climate change to man-made policies. Mm-hmm. And it's just scientifically false. I mean, there's absolutely no basis to say that the weather, that because I drive a big truck that puts out carbon, that I'm causing hurricanes. Mm-hmm. They talk about conspiracy
theories. Well, Americans
in
particular.
Yeah, Americans. Well, but we're one of the cleanest planets, mm-hmm. one of the cleanest developed countries mm-hmm. on Earth.
Right.
And so... if you want to talk about cleaning up the planet, let's talk to China and some of these third world, of these other countries,
India and other places.
but even then, it's ridiculous to tie weather. But that shows how much they hate President Trump. Yeah. Anything you can tie to President Trump, let's do it.
And that's the bottom line. This morning on Fox and Friends, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott was on saying it's time for South Carolinians to think about leaving and heading inland.
I think.
But also praising President Trump, to your point, for the work that he has done already to get things in place to help folks out there. Cut number two.
Complacency leads to catastrophes, not only for you, but for the emergency responders that will be charged with the responsibility of coming to get you. If you are in a mandatory evacuation area, leave. I am a Lowcountry resident all my life, and for the first time in my life, I saw a billboard in Charleston, which is the number one tourist destination in the nation, and simply said, get out. We don't tell people to leave. If we're telling you to leave, it's a problem. I spoke with the White House this morning. I'm so thankful that we have a president that is prepared for the challenge that we face on the southeast coast of America. A couple things that I'm hearing from the president, from the White House, as well as from local folks. Number one, high tide plus storm surge and additional rain, that's the trifecta. When we think about wind or the category strength, that wind has to do with property damage. What causes the loss of life? It's the water.
So that was the Senator from South Carolina, Tim Scott. And just, you know, you hear these warnings over and over and over again, but then somebody shows up in a TV interview saying, I'm staying. I'm going to wait this out because I think maybe the forecasters are wrong. And just don't do that. Leave town.
Yeah, there's, you know, when you see these folks who disregard the mandatory evacuation, and then they get in trouble, and they call from their attic, and they say, come help me. You know, as the warnings go out by the governors and mayors and other people, they say, look, don't call us. We're telling you now to leave, so don't call us when you get in a state of trouble, because then we have to put our first responders at risk, and we're not going to do that. So, you know, another chapter of this story, and in the end will be the saddest one and the most tragic one of this particular storm, is what's happened to the Bahamas.
Oh, my.
Fred and Walker, I was looking last night at an aerial. It was a helicopter, I think it was, going over. And you know how you sometimes you see photographs, especially of tornadoes, and you can – it's a, you know, a couple of miles or so of destruction. When I was looking at these photographs, videos last night from the Bahamas, it was miles and miles and miles of utter destruction. Yeah. And the word that is used and is appropriate is catastrophic.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, when I was looking at these photographs of just hundreds of boats destroyed, cars by the thousands, hundreds or hundreds or thousands, houses by the thousands destroyed. I was thinking to myself, how in the world would these people ever recover?
Yeah.
In the U.S., we have heavy equipment. We have you know, money that they don't have in the Bahamas.
Volunteer services.
Volunteers. We have ways to, you know, recover quicker and get back on our feet. These folks are poor, basically.
Yeah.
And they live on an island or islands that are, what, 5 feet above sea level?
At best.
It's flat.
Yeah.
They don't have the kind of, you know, the power companies that we have. They don't have the heavy equipment that we have. They don't have the expertise that we have. So I know that Americans will do a lot to help them.
Yeah. Dorian hit the Bahamas when it was at its peak. Remember back?
Oh, yeah. 155, 160 mile an hour
wind. It was a Cat 5. It was the worst of the worst of hurricanes.
And just sat there, right?
And it sat and
one mile per hour. It was moving at 1 mile per hour.
And I tell you what, folks, you probably have heard the official death count from the Bahamas. They're saying at least 5. Listen, folks, the reports that we are getting,
that's going to go up
from there, is there are bodies in the water everywhere.
Yeah.
And to your point.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what the reports are saying.
Because if you saw the video, probably the one, same one you're talking about, Dad, the airport there in the Bahamas was, the airport was underwater.
6 feet.
Like, you're standing in the terminal looking down at what is supposed to be the tarmac, and it's the ocean.
Yes.
So we're talking about days before that goes down to where planes can even get onto the island.
Yeah. One of the worst hit areas is, I think it's the Abacus Islands, which are east of the Grand Bahama, where Freeport is. And that area has a lot of just working class folks. That's not the tourist area. Not to say that the Grand Bahama's Freeport has not been hit hard. It has. But as the further east you go, you have poorer areas of the Bahamas, the whole chain of islands. And that area apparently has just have been decimated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the government, it's not, it doesn't have a great deal of resources. They are somewhat attached to the Brits. They were British colonies at one point. They gained their independence, I think, around 1973. And so it's the government setup is kind of like in Canada. They have a prime minister and they have a governor general that's attached to royalty in Britain. But for the most part, they are on their own. And they're going to be depending on the United States. The Coast Guard has already gone in, helping in some of the rescue of the U.S. Coast Guard. And so, folks, it's going to depend on a lot of folks in the United States. In fact, missionary groups from the United States are already gearing up to go in there. Steve Jordahl talked with one yesterday, Bahama pastor former Bahama pastor Randy Crow. I believe he lives in Florida now of Island Outreach. He talks about the devastation of the Bahamas, and the help is on the way. Cut number five.
Pretty much the word they're using is destroyed. The pictures we've all seen is the same. The little island called Man of War Key is about 4 miles off the coast of Abaco Marsh Harbor. People's houses, 80% of them, the roofs are gone. And these aren't shacks. These are nice houses that was built. This is the biggest one in the history of the Bahamas, by all means. It will take years and years. We've got DC-3s going in, all kind of planes. We've got two helicopters going in. I know there's a barge going in multiple boats. Samaritan's Purse is involved with us and Missionary Flights International. Harvest Aviation, we work with them. Agape Flights, we work with them. So those are just some wonderful organizations that are all going to make sure the dollars are going exactly to the Bahamas relief.
Amen. We need to pray for those dear folks.
Is this hurricane going to make a landfall?
What they're predicting right now, if it stays on the track that it's on right now, there will be areas of South Carolina and North Carolina that could take a landfall. Yeah, that is correct.
Also, a note here regarding the Bahamas that people may not realize, and that is it is a predominantly Protestant Christian nation.
Yes.
Because that I was reading like 70 to 80% of the population of the Bahamas are Christians, and I know that obviously we care, Americans care about people regardless of their religion or religious affiliation. I'm just saying that there are a lot of brothers and sisters on the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. Because I remember the last few years at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention that you and I go to, Fred, NRB, the annual convention usually has a big sponsorship by the tourism board, the tourism department from the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. They're trying to obviously woo and recruit people to come to their islands they're best known for their tourism, right? And because of the beauty, the natural beauty of the ocean water and the resorts that they have. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, friendly people.
Yeah.
Bahama. Mm-hmm. They call them Bahamians. I'm not sure exactly, but anyway, just very tragic, and like that gentleman said right there, you're talking years and years before they ever have a semblance of normal life again. There in that, and then of course you had Puerto Rico hit last year by the same type of a hurricane. It's very strong.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's hurricane season in the Caribbean, right?
Yes.
I mean, this happens. Was it you telling me this morning you know, the global warming, the man-made global warming proponents or crowd, they're going to say, well, this is caused by President Trump, or people who think like him.
Yes.
Right. Now, was it you telling me that statistics do not bear out?
That is exactly right.
Okay, go
from
ahead.
This is from the Heritage Foundation.
Uh-huh.
They've looked at all of this. Here's what they have out this morning. The truth about climate change and hurricanes. There hasn't been an increase in hurricanes over the past 50 years. If you look at the science from both the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is certainly not any type of denier of science, it's what Al Gore and the like hail as the magnum opus of climate literature. So they've looked at this. There hasn't been any change for 50 years. Now, you have some seasons where you have more hurricanes and then some with fewer. But the pattern has not changed in 50 years.
After Katrina, Al Gore and those who think like he does, that is, man-made global warming is causing all these, he was predicting these major superstorms.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, come, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. So you're always going to have, you know, you got warm water, and you got tropical storms coming off the African coast. Happens every year. Mm-hmm. Some of them turn into hurricanes. Some of them hit the mainland of the U.S. or, you know, the islands in the Caribbean, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen every
year.
Yeah,
and it's one thing if you had these people on random blog sites making these false claims, but you have people going on CNN.
Oh, yeah.
A major network saying that mm-hmm. Donald Trump is causing hurricanes,
mm-hmm.
or that hurricanes are dramatically more frequent now than they were 5 years ago, but that's not true.
Right.
But they get to say that. And
nobody challenges.
Nobody corrects, and they just move on as if it's no problem.
Well, and the Democrats, almost all the remaining 10 candidates are all with their plans, some yesterday, some today. And in fact, they're having a town hall on CNN on climate change. But they're proposing, the Bernie Sanders and Harris and others, Booker, they're all proposing plans in the trillions of dollars, folks, trillions of dollars. But, you know, they're not stupid people. But they honestly do believe there are a lot of stupid Americans out there that are going to accept what they're saying.
Yeah. Mm. All of these plans are aimed at hurting our economy.
Yes.
And encroaching on our freedoms.
And having the government take over
That's
the economy.
Right. Encroaching on our freedoms because, you know, you even go back and look at that Paris Climate Accord and some of the other agreements that Trans-Pacific Partnership, that was a trade agreement. But these partnerships that we've been doing with other countries, we're the only ones following the rules. I mean,
right.
on the Paris Climate Accord, you had all these countries in on it, like 100-something countries, but all of those went into effect in like 40 years, 20 and 40 years.
20 years, I think it was, for China.
Yeah, and the U.S. Went into effect immediately.
Yeah.
So we had to start clamping down on oil production, coal mining,
right.
and all of these economy boosters. Meanwhile, China's doing whatever it wants.
Right.
So it always works against us.
Right, yes. Right. Yeah, and as I've said before here, whether the climate's warming or not, if it is, I think it's natural and cyclical, and I do not believe, if it is warming, some places it is, some places it isn't, but I don't believe in man-made or American-made or Donald Trump-made,
right?
Global warming, and that's what's at issue here. Because as you say, Walker, what these folks want to do on the left is take it. And Fred, you mentioned this. They want to say to the general American public, it's man-made, carbon emissions, and our plants and factories, and I don't know what else they want to say, here in the U.S., it's basically leading to global warming. And so we need to control these companies. We need to control how much you drive. We need to control the American economy with more regulations to prevent the planet from burning up. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as President Trump has pointed out, all these folks – they just want to put, they want to tie the hands of the American economy. And while leaving China, India, Indonesia, all these other countries, they're not subject to these, all these rules and regulations. And that's what President Trump has said. Listen, I'm not going to kill our economy because, you know, in the name of man-made global warming, he doesn't believe in man-made global warming either, does President Trump. Again, the global warming is going on. Notice they changed that. When was that, about 10 years ago?
Yeah, they changed the terminology.
Why would you change the terminology?
Because the globe stopped warming.
Okay, so we can't call it global warming because statistics don't back that up. So let's go with climate change.
That's right, which it's always changing.
Which we can use regardless of what happens.
Yes.
So if it gets cold, we say climate change.
If it's a hurricane,
we say climate change. Yeah. If it gets hot, say climate. If the Amazon forest is on fire, then we say climate change.
There you go.
Actually, I think the decision to stop calling it global warming was made at a conference in Washington, D.C. They had a global warming conference.
Yeah, it was a snow blizzard.
And it snowed.
Yeah,
they decided, we're going to be the laughing stock of the planet.
Remember the story a couple of years ago where the ship, the research ship, the global warming research boat went into the Arctic to measure how much the glaciers were melting, and they got stuck in ice.
Yes. Bad PR for them. Really
bad. Know, I would be glad to take over the convention responsibilities for the global warming meetings. I know I would. I don't know if I would do this voluntarily, but I got to. Even I know you need to have your global warming annual convention. Bring in all your celebrities, your Prince Harrys, your Bonos, your Al Gores, all your Democrat candidates for president. Bring them in, and you got to go to Phoenix in August. Okay, that would be my first stop. Right, Phoenix in August. What do you think, Walker? And then maybe move to Cairo in early September.
Yeah, but you need to have some rules. They're all about rules and regulations, so you need to make it to
for the little people
where they cannot fly their jet to the conference. They have to ride a bike.
No. These are important people, Walker, and they have to fly the private jets.
Okay,
then they need to go have the private jets take them to a conference where they talk about the need for mass transit.
Yeah. Well, we can meet in the middle, and they can ride their battery-operated vehicles.
You know Prince Harry there? I mentioned his name over there in England. He's taking a beating in the press over there. He and his wife, the American, what is her name?
Markle.
Anyway, they've been taking private jets
everywhere
on their junkets and vacations, and while he gives speeches on global warming and carbon emissions, and the British press and others are calling him out on it.
The rules are for everybody else,
right?
Yeah,
right. Which only sort of proves that these people don't really believe it themselves.
No.
It's just a call celeb, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
That's right.
And it's, what do you call it, virtue signaling?
Yeah.
Yes. We care about the planet. We care about.
We're not going to change our lifestyle.
We care about people, and we need you people to take the train, okay, while they go get on their private jets and go around the world.
And we bulldoze half the forest to make the train track.
And President Obama, you know, he bought himself a $15 million mansion the other day. Mm. I don't know if it's a mansion. I don't think it was a mansion, but it was on
Martha's Vineyard,
and it's right on the coast. People are saying, if you believe in global warming, you're saying the seas are going to rise. You know, it's going to devalue your home when it's flooded. We'll be back in a minute.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
We are in countdown mode. You've been listening. The Maiden Voyage, the television program, is coming up September 6th. The Hamilton Corner goes to television, the NRB TV. You don't want to miss that if possible.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, one of the days that we're in Israel on our March tour, we will be going to Bethlehem. And when we go to Bethlehem, we'll be visiting what's called the Church of the Nativity. And the Church of the Nativity is over the place where Jesus Christ was born. And so we're going to be seeing that very place and experiencing the place where Jesus Christ was born in Bethlehem. And then later, we'll be seeing the shepherd's fields later that same day. So it's going to be a wonderful time. That's just one day in our trip to Israel. For more information on this March 12th through the 20th trip to the Holy Land, go to our website, twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Hollywood considers another blacklist. That story coming up.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
Deborah Messing, the star of Will and Grace, caused quite a stir when she called for a blacklist targeting Tinseltown supporters of President Trump. The president scheduled to attend a fundraiser in Hollywood, leading Miss Messing to call on people to publish a list of everyone who attends. Even Whoopi Goldberg of ABC's The View thought that was a bad idea.
This is not a good idea, okay?
Listen,
your idea of who you don't want to work with is your personal business. Do not encourage people to print out lists, because the next list that comes out, your name will be on, and then people will be coming after you.
It's not the first time radical leftists have employed McCarthyism. It was a standard practice among opponents of Prop 8. In one shameful episode, protesters boycotted a diner because one of the waitresses gave money to support traditional marriage. How's that for tolerance? I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News Commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Thank you, all you little people out there, for listening to American Family Radio on Today's Issues. Those of us who are going to be have to find a way to take mass transit, we're not going to be able to have our cars anymore because we cause global warming. Now, the celebrities don't cause global warming. Mm-mm. They take their private planes all around the world for different events while telling the rest of us, you know, why we should walk. Anyway, we were talking earlier about the situation in the Bahamas, and I was just looking at more pictures. I can't even hardly look anymore because imagine going outside, in your town and seeing destruction as far as the eye could see, and it goes on for miles and miles and miles and miles. They had, you ever put your arm out driving down the road, and mm-hmm. Your arm out the car and you're going 50 miles an hour and you just feel the way that shakes. You know, you can hardly do that, 50 miles an hour. This storm was sitting on top of the Bahamas with 185 mile an hour sustained winds for
hours.
Hours and hours and hours. So you can imagine nothing's left standing. And I don't know, it went on for miles and miles and miles and miles. Very sad, very tragic. I don't know what all we can do to help. This is a British.
It has a connection, but for the most part, it's an independent nation.
We can do a lot. We can do charity.
Yeah.
Work, private charity.
Yes.
Work, and I'm sure our government, through the Coast Guard and others, will do what we can. But, you know, to rebuild that place, you're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars that I'm sure the Bahamas doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And the tourism industry now be shut off for a
which,
while.
Which is the economy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, J.J. Jasper's in studio with us, as promised. Good morning, J.J.
Good morning.
J.J., we were talking the hurricane, you know, the forecast has to come from somewhere, right? We have to have the data to prepare so that people can get out of harm's way. And you had the opportunity to go on one of these hurricane, what do you call them?
Hurricane hunters. Yes, they're the 53rd Weather Reconnaissance Squadron, the 403 wing of the Air Force Reserves located at Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi. They're the only unit in the world that do what they do. They have access to 10 C-130 airplanes. They're called Super Hercules, just big workhorse airplanes. And they fly to the hurricane on purpose. When everybody's boarding up with plywood, they're going into the hurricane, and they make four passes through the hurricane.
Now, you went. When did you go?
Yeah, I got to go the one right before Katrina. Katrina was in 2005. And I got to fly with them.
You wanted to go.
I wanted to go. I got to fly into Hurricane Francis in 2004. My in-laws were not real happy about that. My wife, one of the most sobering parts is when they have you read the literature and it says you can have you can drop 1,000 feet. You can have, you know, sheer wind, severe turbulence, and the possibility of death. There are no parachutes on board. There's only 14 hours of fuel, and there's not going to be any refueling, and the trip lasts 11 or 12 hours. And and in the literature that you sign,
is this what the stewardess is telling you?
Well, they say that there's a possibility that you may wind up, that you may not wind up on the same base or in the same country where you started, and you're responsible for your own way back. So then,
sign here.
Well, the part that's really bold. This is if this turns out to be a fatal situation for me, I'm not going to be mad at anybody, and no, we're
so
not going to sue the military.
So you left out. You left out of.
Left out of Keesler Air Force Base. But a little backstory: a lieutenant colonel who's an AFR listener, he contacted me, said, "Hey, I know you're a pilot. You love aviation. I can get you a media ride with the Hurricane Hunters. Would you be interested?" I said, "Absolutely." True to his word, he contacted me two different times, said, "Okay, if you can be here in 4 hours, we're going to put you on this. It's a tropical storm. It's been upgraded to a hurricane." Well, I had a speaking event scheduled for the first two times, and I said, "Hey, can you give me just a little bit more notice?" He said, "It's a hurricane." You know, you don't put those on the calendar. So he called like he had before. He called, he said.
Now, were you in Tupelo or were you on the coast?
Tupelo, then? Mississippi. He said, if you can be in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands, I'm going to put you on the same flight with Geraldo Rivera.
Right, wow. Right.
So he said, if you can be there, you know, in 5 hours, but if you can't make that, come to Biloxi, Mississippi the next day and fly out of Keesler. So I checked on the flights and I could get to the Virgin Islands with 30 minutes was the only wiggle room. And I thought, man, if I'm stranded and then, you know, it's no power and I'm in the Virgin Islands and I miss the flight, you know, I'm going to have a hard time explaining that to my wife.
Right.
So I flew out of Keesler. You have a briefing room. Everybody's in flight suits, military people, highly decorated.
How many are the team members on the plane?
I think there were seven of us. But they're very serious about what they do. And they, you know, we went out to the C-130, we took off, we went 3 hours and intercepted the Hurricane Francis, 75 miles southwest of the Bahamas.
Wow.
And you normally make four passes through it. We made six passes through it, and they have a tube, and it's like a canister, like when you're doing your banking and you put your money in that canister and that tube sucks it into the bank. That's what they have, but it's called a drop sun, and it's got a parachute, and there's a tube and a computer station. Right when we get to the eye of the storm and everything's real calm, when you enter the eye wall, It's very violent, a lot of turbulence. You get in the eye, it's very smooth, as you would expect. Then they yell, drops on away, and everybody's working feverishly because you got a small window. They drop this thing, and it falls at 2,500 feet a minute. Every 2 seconds, it captures data, humidity, wind speed, temperature, and it sends all this to Miami. So every time when you're watching the nightly news, when they say, oh, it's slowed down or it's wobbled, now it may come to this town instead of this town, every bit of that is because of the brave men and women of the hurricane hunters. They're getting that data, sending that to Miami, and then it goes on the nightly news.
Has there ever been an incident?
I think there's been one of all the years that they've
been doing
that. Don't
they fly above the hurricane?
No, that's what I thought.
They fly in it?
They fly right smack in it. And I thought, you know, they're going to fly up at the top where it's maybe weaker. No, it's at 10,000 feet, and it's right into it, and you're going into the wind. And I wrote about it, and Jonah had a whale of a time, and a couple of things I mentioned that
That's a book you wrote.
That's a book I wrote, and one of the chapters is Hurricane Hunters. And they took us to the flight deck. Then there was an observation window, and we had 3 hours to get there. And I was starting to think while I was riding, and I thought of some of these things. All military airplanes, including the one I was on, were built for the federal government on parts supplied by the lowest bidder. And also, no parachutes on board. Some of those other things that I mentioned, you know, you're sitting there thinking,
right.
You know.
Now, did your heart start racing? Do you remember the adrenaline flowing?
I do. Yeah, it was very, very serious. And look, they're not thrill seekers, and they're not, you know, they're really professionals. And somebody told me in the course of all of it, if I can remember everything, you know, of course, protecting life is the main thing. But even tourism, they call it $1 million a mile. If they miss the town by 1 mile, all the restaurants that close, all the people that are evacuated, all the businesses, it's $1 million a mile if they say, oh, we thought it was going to hit this city, but we missed it by 10 miles.
Right.
So, but they're very, very...
Whatever happened to that particular hurricane, did it ever...
It was 47 people died, $9 billion in property damage. I don't remember all of that. I put all the details in the book, but it was a great experience. As I mentioned, my in-laws weren't crazy about it. Neither was my wife. But when we married, she knew I was a bit of a daredevil and thrill seeker. But it was coming back. They gave me some headsets because I was a pilot. He invited me up to the jump seat, and the pilot said to the media, he said, few people have gone through a hurricane, have flown through a hurricane and lived to tell about it. He said, you're going to have a story to tell your grandchildren. You've done something that few people on the planet have done. So, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But I'm very thankful for the brave men and women of the Hurricane Hunters, again, the only unit in the world that
do what they do. So they all fly out of Keesler?
It's Keesler Air Force Base, and then they have another place there at St. Croix. But their basic unit flies out of Keesler. And some of the places, I mean, it's not just they go everywhere where there's a storm. You know, they go to the Central Pacific Ocean, Atlantic Ocean, Caribbean Sea, and the Gulf of Mexico. Anytime there's a tropical storm developing into a hurricane.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for sharing that experience with us, JJ.
Hey, thank you. And we're praying for the folks in the Carolinas, Georgia, and our hearts are heavy for the folks that it was Category 5, as you mentioned, when it hit the Bahamas. And I just cannot imagine what they're going through.
Thanks, JJ. Appreciate
Thank you.
That's JJ Jasper sharing his experience of flying with the Hurricane Hunters. A few years back, he had the opportunity to do that. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Walker and Fred. Fred, next story.
Yeah, headline here, YouTube to pay $170 million fine after violating kids' privacy law. And basically what this is about, folks, is that YouTube was tracking who's using particular videos that they put up. Now, YouTube, we got to remember, is owned by Google, all right? Mm-hmm. So they're tracking what your kids are watching, the videos that your kids are watching, And then they sell that information to companies. And so now they've been fined $170 million. Don't feel too sorry, though, for Google and YouTube, because I think last year or 2 years ago, after expenses, they made something like $30 billion.
Wow.
So this is a drop in the bucket. But it is a reminder, mom and dad, you've got to be very careful about what your kids are watching because they're being tracked. Mm-hmm. And also, another story here, and this one is out of Colorado, folks. Be careful what you put up on Instagram and Facebook. A family in Colorado found out just the trouble you can get in. Here was a mother and her son, 16-year-old son, decided to go to a shooting range. And they decided to put the boy's name is Nate. They decided to put him shooting a gun on video and put it up on Facebook. Well, a short time later, the cops arrive because this looks like a dangerous situation. You got a 16-year-old with a gun. So the cops arrive and they understand everything's okay. But because it's out there on social media, somebody contacts his school. Then he gets a message, you're not allowed on campus anymore. Now, even though they were at a shooting range, mom and son,
right.
It didn't matter. The image resulted in all of this happening. Mm-hmm. It's just a reminder once again, folks. You've got, with the day and age in which we live, the sensitivities to all of this, you've got to be so careful what mm-hmm. you put on social media. If you think for a moment you're just sharing it with a couple of friends, or think right. you think it looks cute that, you know, in this case, the son's got a gun in his hand mm-hmm. and look at us, we're out having a good time at the shooting range.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah. And also anything that's free when it comes to these apps, it's free for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's because the company has to make money some way. You can't just offer free stuff all the time. The way they make money is data mining. Mm. They mine your data, then they resell it or use it for their own purposes for advertising. So
yeah.
Facebook, that's how these companies make their money.
Yeah.
is Facebook and YouTube and others, they sell your data and run ads, which is fair game, but you just have to realize when you're signing up for something free, you're giving away a little bit of your privacy.
Speaking of guns, Walmart announcing yesterday that it's going to stop selling certain gun ammunition. That's a sale of handgun and short barrel rifle ammunition. And also public making a request that customers refrain from openly carrying firearms in stores, even where state laws allow it. So Walmart reacting to the recent string of tragic events, various parts of the country.
Those shootings in Walmart had nothing to do with people bringing, carrying.
You had the incident right? of the young man, I forget where it was in Missouri, that he came in. He had a legal right to carry. He had a concealed carry permit. But our own Dan Celia responded to all of this morning, too, talking about corporate America and how they react sometimes to these sorts of things. Cut number four.
The market share of ammunition that is distributed by Walmart is 20%. Folks, that is a very large number. That 20% is likely to go to 8, 9, somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe even lower over time. So here's a retailer, again, slowing down, eliminating some foot traffic into their stores. I find this just lunacy because the research does not back up any of what they are intending to do. This is what happens when we have CEOs around the country that have no backbone and that care much more about being socially conscious in their mind than anything else.
What do you think about this, Walker?
That's ridiculous that you're going to start limiting firearm and ammunition sales because there was one shooting in Texas when you have thousands of Walmart stores across the world. I mean,
So is it virtue signaling?
It's virtue signaling, and it may make some people happy, but if you really think that's going to solve, that Walmart is never going to have another shooting, because you're limiting ammunition sales? I mean, that's so...
I don't get it either.
It's so bizarre.
I don't see the connection, except that they're trying to make a statement that we are conscious, we're socially conscious, so we're really against guns and ammunition. We think reducing the sales of those will reduce violence in America.
Yeah.
I guess it's
as if you've had a mass or a string of people going into Walmart, buying their gun and ammunition in Walmart and passing a background check, and then they go in the bathroom and load it up with the Walmart gun and ammunition and then shoot people in Walmart.
Yeah.
That's the way Walmart is treating it. Well, we're just going to stop selling guns and ammo.
You know what? You people can shoot anybody anywhere, anytime, and for any reason or no reason at all. I mean, really, it's amazing that we have such freedom with the Second Amendment, and we don't have any more violence than we do.
Yep.
We do have a lot of gun violence, but usually it's by people who have obtained guns illegally.
Yes.
Or they're criminals, or they are intent on harming others.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing you can do to absolutely, in a free society, stop that from happening everywhere all the time. So, but anyway, it's interesting to me because I'm thinking Walmart's surrendering a lot of money here that they would have made otherwise by making this decision. I don't know. With seeing how it worked.
It was interesting. Somebody said this morning, you know, more than 36,000 people die in car accidents every year. So should Walmart stop selling auto parts?
That's about the same line of reasoning.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I do know. I think this is a bad decision on their part. But I guess somebody who's selling ammunition will benefit somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to Walmart to get my ammo. The few they have left, go somewhere else.
Right. And Dick's
stopped selling semi-automatic rifles. I'll tell you where I go to, not an endorsement, but a preference. I go to Academy Sports because they have a huge selection of ammo. You know, you go to Walmart now and you have to get the associate to come unlock the cabinet so you can get your ammo. It takes like 30 minutes to get one box of ammo. But you go to Academy, and they got it all spread out, and you can just grab your own and go check it out. So it's a nice gun store.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Fred and Walker. We thank you for listening. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Well, our good friend Lynn Ingram is on the phone with us from Abilene TX, and where there are no hurricanes or hurricane warnings. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, and I can promise you this.
Yes.
We will sell all the ammo you want, and we'll sell all of the laundry and dry clean detergent you could ever use, okay?
Okay.
This does not deter us one bit.
Gotcha. I know it doesn't. Lynn joins us from Abilene with Redeem Clean. We've mentioned it many times here on the program, the Redeem Clean laundry detergent. And if you purchase any of these products, you know, you will be supporting the Ministry of American Family Association and American Family Radio as well. How's your phone ringing when you're talking to me on it?
I'm talking to you on the landline. I'm sorry. I forgot to mute that other one. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No problem. I just wondered how that was happening.
Yes, sir.
Lynn.
Yes.
You guys. By the way, Walker, how can people purchase the Redeem Clean?
Yeah, redeemclean.afastore.net.
Give that again.
Redeemclean.afastore.net.
Okay. What kind of feedback, Lynn, have you guys been getting?
Tim, can I get the very best one that we've had that just reinforces our whole project for doing this in the first place? And I'm going to read to you what she wrote. It was from a lady that signed up only because she wanted to support the AFA Ministries. And knowing that every time she does a routine thing like washing clothes, she's not giving her money to one of the big companies that had no say-so about how it's being spent, but instead to help the ministry of Jesus Christ. She said it was a big surprise for her when she used the product because it was the best one she ever used. But her primary motivation was, I'm sorry, her primary motivation was to support AFA and AFR. Pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, where was she from? Do you remember?
I don't know. I've just got an email address. I'm sorry.
Gotcha.
Well, and I can support that. Another one that's kind of runs, there's a common thread that runs through here, is about the sensitivity to allergies and dyes and fragrances and things, that our Free and Clear product is meeting that goal, that they don't have an allergic reaction to anything that we're doing.
Amen.
So that's good too.
Amen. What do we have to offer?
We got it all, the whole line. We got our great laundry detergent, the regular. We got Free and Clear, that is the dye-free, fragrance-free. We have dryer sheets. We have a spotter. We have a multi-surface cleaner. We have dryer sheets. Anything that you need to wash your clothes, we have got. We can accommodate you. If we don't have it, we'll get it.
Okay. And, Walker, how to buy the laundry detergent?
Yeah, redeemclean.afastore.net.
And I use it. You use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you ship right to the house, right?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. No charge. Free shipping, and it just works great. Matter of fact, Jim Duncan was in town yesterday as we were working on some things, and he said, be sure and tell you guys hi. Hope you're doing well. And just want to encourage y'all to just stay strong with the things that you're doing.
Well, praise the Lord. And thank you for that, Lynn.
Thank you.
And Jim, and tell Jim hello for us, and we'll visit with you again next time.
Great. Thank you, guys. Y'all have a good one. And we're going to keep selling soap, okay?
Okay, you do that.
Hey, bye-bye.
All right, thank you, brother.
Bye.
That's Lynn Ingram. He's in the laundry business for 4 or 5 decades. So they're in his family business there in Abilene, Texas, and a listener to American Family Radio. You're listening to AFR. Thank you for listening. Yes, Fred, next story.
Kansas University.
Uh-huh.
A few of the faculty members there. They have declared war on Chick-fil-A.
Really?
Yeah.
You got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything, Fred. So they've decided to take their stand against Chick-fil-A.
The faculty council, filled with extreme frustration, that's in quotation marks, wants America's favorite restaurant removed from campus for being, quote, a bastion of bigotry.
Well, I don't think they're going to. Is it going to be successful? This is a group of professors?
Yeah.
Who is this?
Faculty members.
In Lawrence?
Kansas University.
Yeah, in Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. You know what this is? They won't say it, but what this is about is that Chick-fil-A was founded and is currently run by a Christian family.
Oh, that's what it's all about.
Right. That's the simple as that. One sentence.
Well, yeah. Here's what they cite, these people who want to boycott Chick-fil-A or keep Chick-fil-A from coming on campuses or in airports. Chick-fil-A, okay, their owners, the Cathy family, are evangelical Christians.
Yes.
And they make donations to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, for one, and the Salvation Army, I think, as well. Anyway, so what these folks do, they'll say, because Chick-fil-A makes donations
to the Salvation Army,
or the Cathy family makes donations to the Salvation Army and to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, for example, those organizations have statements of faith that says basically homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. Basically is what it says.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, Chick-fil-A is a bigot, a bastion of bigotry.
Because of their Christian faith.
Yep.
Now, the vast, vast majority of Americans don't make that connection. They don't buy that. But you get a few of these LGBTQ radicals who they want to make that connection, so they don't want to eat Chick-fil-A sandwiches. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.